Are you in this very moment observing or participating?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 74 for the week of June 16th, 2015. I am Potatoes O'Brien, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Heart of Palm, Sarah D. Bunting.
Need a hand with those dishes?
Lorraine Quiche, Tara Ariano.
I just had eggs.
And antipasto made from real antis, Joe Reed.
Gross olives.
That's it for another week.
God, you won me over with your olives. Olive hate forever. I hear you.
That was great. Welcome back, Joe Reed.
Thanks for having me.
Joe, you superstar.
Delighted to be back.
It's true. So today we are discussing Hannibal, as you probably gleaned from the queasiness of the intro. As we record this, we are two episodes into the new season, and in my opinion, it is much, like, it seems more overtly disgusting. At least I have come closer to gagging than I had in two full seasons previously. I'd like to talk a little bit later about how this continues to air in prime time on a regular network. But first, I'd like to know if you guys also think it's so far more gross.
I think being thrown back into the deep end with it, as it were, is just so like you sometimes forget with time. It's just sort of like how grody it really can be. I think the kill in the first episode where he kills the whatever the TA or whoever it is that he knew from the university was more sort of brutal than I feel like we'd seen Hannibal be in the first two seasons. And then the torso sculpture, the words, really. Just marinate in that for a second.
Well, and then it grows legs!
Yeah,
it's unfolding its disarticulated, like, hyper-extended joints to become this weird, like, Jan Svankmajer stag creature with the... But that still, to me, is not the most disgusting. My brother, occasional guest, and esteemed colleague, Dave Bunting, still says that the, like, Fibonacci swirl of bodies
together from season two
is the grossest thing he's ever seen. And he's like, and I have two children whose birth certificate is, so, yeah.
I will, two examples for the court's pleasure. Cello Man.
Yes. Oh, yeah, that's the one I always remember. Yes.
And horse belly guy
See, I don't think this season is grosser. I think it's just creepier. Like, I think, like, you know, the spider deer headless body crawling around thing. Like, the only thing it was missing was, like, hello, hi, Will. I'm your nightmare. That's, like, the only thing that thing was missing. And the body as heart sculpture, like, that is just, like, conceptually creepy, because you have to imagine it's like that scene from The Americans where they crush that guy into his suitcase. It's
lady.
Just like,
oh
yeah,
lady.
You know, like, you're imagining the process, and that is what creeps me out. Like, I find, like, as far as, like, what is more worthy of Fangoria magazine, like season one and two, like especially the necktie guy, especially the totem pole of.
Oh, yeah, and the angel. There's really a lot of high points in those first two seasons.
Yeah, this has just been, like, more, like, just creepier. More like Silent Hill, if anybody plays video games. Mm. This is more of that kind of horror.
I feel like, and maybe it's just because for my mind's own protection, it forgets. Sort of like hating past reality show contestants, and then when their season ends, like, they're wiped from my mind. But I feel like this, we've seen more actual kills on screen than we normally do. A lot of times I feel like the kills sort of happen where we don't see them, and we just see the aftermath or the posing or the design or whatever. But maybe I very well could be misremembering that. And the ones from this latest episode, episode two, where he, like, just fully slashes a girl's throat, and it is slow and it gushes for a while. Like, Sarah, we were talking about how all the shows that you cover on NBC are, like, super dark, like, in lighting. And now I feel like we know why. It's probably because if we actually saw everything in full color, it would never pass standards and practices, because it's brutal. Like, I feel like this is R-rated movie level violence, and it's just on TV for anyone to see, which is crazy.
So to Sarah's point, how does this air at 10 o'clock on NBC?
I have no idea. I really don't know. It's a mystery to me. Every season, it is nuts. I mean,
I think there's... Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I think that it's NBC, which is like the TV equivalent of a quadruple A team at this point. And they can... I mean, it's weird how, like, sometimes they will take these kinds of chances and sometimes they won't. But it's NBC. It's the summertime.
Yeah, that helps.
And I think this is now one of those shows that, like, critics watch and spend a lot of time... you know, English section 341-ing to death. Mm-hmm. I am also guilty of this. It's like, well, here's this. And I, based on what I read on Wikipedia, it ties into this blah, blah, Virgil with an E, because I'm a pretentious asshole.
Just but to break in at this point, reading your posts, I'm grateful for the erudition that you bring to them, and also grateful that I picked Under the Dome in the short straw, where it's like, anything goes! I don't have to research anything, because they don't. Anyway, proceed.
I only research stuff I care about, and then I'm like, look at this belt. Like, I don't care. I'm like, I want these fish handles. It's like, there's a body in that bathtub. I don't care. But I think that it's one of those things. It's like I wouldn't sort of compare it to The Wire, really, except that I think there is this, like, the critics talk about it. The critics like it.
Yeah.
It gets talked about, even if it's not necessarily in a positive way. And also, everybody knows full well what it is.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, there used to be, not so much maybe anymore, but there used to be this class of movies. Maybe I recognized it more because I was younger and I was looking for, like, nudity in movies, but, like, there was a class of movie that was, like, arty nudity and, like, artful sex scenes, and it would be in these, like, British costume dramas, like, yeah, Angels and Insects and stuff like
Metro
that.
Land. Oh, yeah.
Right, where I'm just like, maybe Christian, I'll see Mark Bale's Rylance's butt. Like, I don't know why I would want
Christian Bale's penis all over Netflix and Hollywood Video.
But those things tended to, like, get a pass more because they were artful. And I feel like there's maybe a chance that that's the case with Hannibal, because everything is so... It's like you're watching an art installation in, you know, a museum, for, like, how beautiful can you make... such grossness and disgusting violence.
And I think that's, like, a worthwhile thing to, like, just look without blinking at the intimacy that death shares with sex and food and things that we've been talking about since Petronius and the Bible, really, because one of the things the Bible is trying to do is, like, separate all those things so that we don't all lose our fucking minds.
Yeah. Literally.
So from, like, a literary standpoint, I think that's a totally worthwhile thing to do. From a TV, like, shows with a plot standpoint, not a lot goes on. Like, in a single episode, like, yeah, sure, some people get killed and prepared.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how much time has technically passed, like, aside from that 8-month jump?
Right. It does feel like more time has passed in between this past couple seasons and everything else that's happened in the two seasons previous combined. I don't know. It's interesting. Plot, if you get too hung up on that plot, it gets a little tough, I think, to deal with the pace maybe a little bit, but there's so much that they're throwing at you visually and, like, to your senses that it becomes easier. Like, I know, Sarah, you've seen the third episode, so, like, don't tell me, but, like, I don't think we'll even know what's happened to Crawford and Alana by the third episode. Like, maybe one of them, but it seems like they're parceling out that, like, who survived thing very slowly.
And smartly leaving everybody in the credits.
But yes.
Yeah, I think you're right that, you know, sometimes in our forums we have people being like, you know, the show is really, like, somehow it manages to be boring despite all this, despite the visuals. And despite the fact that the flashback from the premiere episode was the thing that, like, I really had to go outside, like, literally get some air because of snail hand, because, I don't know what it is. That's, like, probably the least gross thing they've shown, but, like, then there's this close-up of the snail just... snailing, and I was like, I cannot. But then that segment actually was kind of like, once we cut away from that, I'm like, oh my god, like, okay. okay. You're slowly feeding him to himself. Get to a point.
Well, and also, speaking of the snail thing, this is my question too. Do we, is it assumed now that he's flavoring up Bedelia for nefarious purposes? Or like, why was he feeding her all those things that he was feeding Eddie Izzard at their dinner in Florence?
Well, I think you could argue that when he's like, well, I didn't know it was that kind of party.
Oh,
he's like, yeah. Oh, it's not. But I mean, there is an argument to be made that it is. That that does make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where was your friend in the men's or in the black?
Where was the pineapple juice, guys? I mean, here, I have a question that's a little bit off topic from what's actually been in the interview or in the episodes. But Entertainment Weekly asked Brian Fuller about the current, as they call it, rape epidemic on TV. And he gave this whole answer that was like, that's not something that we'll do. I consider it low hanging fruit, blah, 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 which I find like it is. And in a lot of shows, it's treated very cheaply, like SVU, which he mentions, which is 100%. Totally fair of him to do. But at the same time, his show is completely about murder. So I don't know why. Do we think he has the right to claim any kind of moral high ground on this?
Yeah, I don't think it's, I don't know. I mean, yes, he has a point. But in the case of SVU, it's like it's Special Victims Unit. It's right there in the name.
Oh, yeah. And he says it's a show about rape, which it is, basically.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that's a great example, but I mean, there has been a lot of discussion, you know, not even with Hannibal in it, about how, you know, Game of Thrones and a couple of other shows seem to be relying pretty heavily on the shock value of that kind of thing to,
yeah.
What's the other one? Outlander?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That, well, Debenham was like, nope, I'm done. Yeah. You're using this too much.
And if I think his point is, which I'm not sure it is, but if his point is, there's not rape on Hannibal because, like, it would be too much piled on. Like, yeah, good. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I think there are varying degrees of the universes that you sort of travel in. And, like, not to get too into the Game of Thrones thing, but, like, with the Game of Thrones thing, it's sort of baked into that world in a way that it doesn't necessarily have to be. Hannibal has its own things baked into its world, pun intended.
Olives.
Yeah.
I'll send you, Sarah, when you do the copy, I'll send you the link to this interview so you can see exactly what he says. But he mentions, like, you know, there's the Red Dragon story, which in the books is rapey, I guess, and that he wanted to kind of try and de-emphasize that on behalf of the audience for the show, which is largely female, as he notes. But he also says he wants to sort of de-emphasize that and make more pronounced the crimes against the victim's family as a whole. We didn't want to glorify it. Well, not glorify, because I don't think any of the crime procedural shows are actually glorifying rape, but it is certainly explored so frequently that it rarely feels genuine, is what he said.
Huh. Well, I don't know. I think that for him, I mean, in my last piece, I made a reference to, and there are several references to this famous crypt in Rome, which is a tourist attraction, I believe. Like, I think it's open to the public. It's called the Capuchin Crypt. It's like the doorway of skulls.
Right.
And there are like 3,000 people sort of involved in this architectural thing. And that, you know, I guess the church has taken a lot of criticism for letting people look at it. And it's like, well, this is supposed to be a reminder. This was built as a reminder of, like, the fragility of life.
Yeah.
And I think that was an interesting, like, that he didn't refer to it directly or show it to us directly yet. But I think his argument that he's, you know, trying to look at these horrors as horrors, like, yes, they're fetishized to some degree, but I think he's trying to make the audience question, for example, when there's an extreme close-up of, like, a pork loin, and I, who don't even eat actual pork loin, I'm like, that looks fucking delicious.
Right, right.
He's trying to get you to, whatever, interrogate your prejudices about the material. But he is trying to do that, and I think it's worthwhile.
Or even just to trick you into finding that appealing for a second, and then you have to pull yourself back and be like, wait a second, like, what's happening here? And I feel like that's a lot of, it ties into the way that we get the Will character, who can't just be the flat foot investigator on Hannibal's tail. He can't just be what Jack is, basically. Mm-hmm. He has to be roped in and damaged and sort of broken down by his fascination with Hannibal, because that's the rest of this world that they're presenting Hannibal as, such a seductive figure that they have to show how much that damages somebody who gets too close to it.
Well, I wonder how much of a problem this is for, like, the writers or just the production in general, that Mads Mikkelsen is king shit of Fuck Mountain.
Yeah.
And
it's
again,
very,
pun intended.
Yeah. It is very difficult to make this guy, like, even an anti-hero, much less, like, this horrible, terrifying villain. And I'm sure they had the same problem with Anthony Hopkins, and I'm sure that's
not
part
the
of
same
point.
Way.
Not the same way, but yeah.
Well, no. I mean, Anthony Hopkins in motorcycle leathers?
No thanks.
Pass.
But even like when Potsy pulls out what seems to be like an old passport photo of Mads Mikkelsen, it's like, yep, I still would. Sorry, Ilmostro.
Well, and it's I love the stylization on that photo, BTW. Like, speaking of like the prop masters and whatever, that where it looked like it could have been like a Leopold and Loeb like era photo, like it just really called to mind a lot of those like old-timey great true crime stories.
Well, and given the monkeying they're doing with the timeline about this Monster of Florence thing, which I will not bore you until the show notes, but yeah, it's like, okay, like, fine, he's the Monster of Florence, it's not like they ever caught the guy, but like, if you're gonna change the timeline, do it so it works.
He's a Monster of Florence.
Yes.
Speaking of,
just ask Florence, she'll tell you.
The one thing that I find myself getting tired of this show is the sort of the villain savantness of Hannibal. Like, he is basically the, like, you know, the killer superhero of this show. He, you know, none of his plans really go that wrong. He's always in control. He's always the person moving everything forward. And, you know, when you take that element of suspense out, that, you know, that, you know, Hannibal is the one that's not going to die. You know, Hannibal's the one that doesn't get all fucked up. Then you really lean on everything else. And one of those things is Will. And I fucking hate Will. I think he's, it may not be his character. It may be the actor. But I find when they lean on everything else, and that is Will, that is all, you know, the 3 minute long, you know, him cutting pork loins into little medallions and all that sort of stuff. That's what slows it down for me, is that it's everything plus the absence of any troubles for Hannibal. Anybody else have that?
I am not bothered by that. Having been watching Investigation Discovery, had its foray into scripted material regarding Ted Bundy, which was terrible, and I talked about it last week. But they also did a follow up that was like a like interviews with the real investigators of the case, and it's, you know, this is true of many serial killer cases, that it really is like hard to catch these guys, like, until they actually start linking these things together. And then even still,
yeah,
they can't necessarily track these guys down. And you know, I think there is a commentary about the hiding in plain sightness of it. So that part doesn't bother me that much, that Hannibal always, I mean, I don't know when he sleeps, and he seems to have 27 hours in his day.
He knows, he's like Gorin. He knows everything. He's fucking Ken Jennings and Gorin combined. Like, you want to know about the minutiae of
Medici?
And Martha
Stewart, hello.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I understand the character they're building, but sometimes the fact that
I mean, I totally get your frustration, just sort of from the true crime nerd perspective. Yeah. It's like, that doesn't strike me as that unrealistic, actually, unfortunately.
I'm glad Abigail's dead. I was worried for a second there that they really were going to go through with that. And they're like, oh, he knew exactly how to cut my throat and yada, yada, yada. And yeah. I was legitimately surprised when they cut to her autopsy, but I was very relieved, because at some point we got to have some stakes. Like, some people, some main characters do need to stay dead. Yeah. They've pulled that card a lot.
Yeah.
Right. And I think they're going to pull that card at least a couple more times with Jack and or Alana. But again, that's me guessing.
Dear Mr. President, there are too many states nowadays. Please eliminate three. I am not a crackpot.
I am not a crackpot, but Sam Fairchild, of all the slimy, gross crab monsters on this planet, you are apparently the hottest. Happy 30th birthday, you old bastard.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, Bernsie. well, you old bastard.
Hello, everybody. Let's kick off Around the Dial with Murder in the First. This is the kind of quintessentially inessential TNT procedural plus that you can totally craft a spot the allowed swears drinking game around. but I'm actually hoping some of y'all will get on board with me for the summer. Kathleen Robertson, a.k.a. Claire Chancellor's daughter from 90210 Original Flavor. It's very likable in it. They seem to have scotched the partners make out storyline from the end of last season, thank God, although it's early yet. Could bring that back, and it is Taye Diggs. You know.
Twitter makes sense. Play. Twitter mega yeah. follower, Taye yeah. Diggs. Yeah.
And the first episode, school bus shooting, was like not anyone's idea of a good time, obviously, but it was very tensely and effectively done. I wasn't sure I was going to keep watching for season two. But I'm back in after a really strong premiere, and it's like perfect summertime viewing. It's not all that challenging. It's a good companion to Major Crimes. Like, you kind of don't have to necessarily keep up, but it's good, like, air conditioning, do your toenails TV. I recommend.
How many people eat each other in it? Or is that what they cut?
Figuratively? Damn it!
That is what I call fanfare. Thank you. So it's still, we're still 1 month away from the Emmy nominations.
Oh,
the
primetime Emmy nominations. Are you serious?
July 16th, my friends. Good. Mark it on your calendars. Since I won't be here between now and July 16th, now you're going to hear from me. And you're going to hear a few of my four-year considerations for this year's Emmy Awards. I'm not going to bother with the shows and the performances that I feel like are shoo-ins, like your Mad Men's or whatever. Although I will be fascinated to see who beats Jon Hamm this year, because yeah. it always happens. There's nobody, none of his old competition seems to be around anymore. I guess Spacey, but I don't really think Spacey's going to do it. It's a long shot, but right now, if I had $10 to put down, I would put, if I had 10, I don't have $10 to put down, people. Send me
oh,
money.
No. Oh, boy.
Oh, were I to put down $10 on a bet, I might take a long shot on Kyle Chandler for Bloodline, just because he's won before, and stranger things have happened. James Spader for Boston Legal. But so these are my pleas to the no doubt scores of Emmy voters who are out there listening in the Extra Hot Grade audience right now.
Hi. Hi, guys. Listen,
it could happen. Will Forte and Last Man on Earth, both because I really liked the performance. I think it was a nervy performance and not always a likable one, but that's what made me appreciate it more.
Basically not ever a likable one,
no,
which is what
right.
made it great.
Yeah. Right. And I love him as a performer. And also that category, best actor in a comedy, has been so thin and weak in the last several years.
It's Jim Parsons.
Who's the defending champ?
Jim Parsons has won like four out of the last 5 years.
So he's the Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah. And like, this is where they nominated Ricky Gervais for Derek, even though no one either watched or liked it.
No.
And like, Don Cheadle has been nominated for every season of House of Lies. So like, and this year now they've got, everybody seems to think like they're going to nominate Billy Crystal for that show, The Comedians.
Oh, God.
Also a show nobody has either watched or liked.
No, it's awful.
My worry is that they're going to nominate Matthew Perry from The Odd Couple, because that's doing that did well in the ratings. Yeah. Anyway.
This category is a real shit show, it sounds
it's
like.
A real shit show. So that's what I'm saying. You've got Will Forte there, who's doing really good work. And so just consider that. In the comedy category, in the supporting category.
Before you move on, sorry, I have point of order. So where is Transparent then? Is it considered a comedy?
Transparent is considered a comedy because it's a half hour.
So Jeffrey Tambor might sneak in there.
Right. He's going to be the one new person who I think will definitely get nominated. And I think probably has the best chance to beat Jim Parsons, although never bet against the Emmys staying with the same winners as the year before, because that's what they love to do.
Okay, proceed. Sorry.
Yes. No, thank you. Elsewhere in the comedy category, though, this is a complete long shot, I know, but Constance Wu is so funny and fresh off the boat and so wonderful and likable and a great sort of new face for television and for sitcom. I would fall off my chair if she got nominated. She won't. That's a very sort of crowded category this year.
Everyone from Modern Family.
Yeah. Well, no, because they're all in. I think they would put Constance Wu in lead. But even in lead, like, I think Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. What is her? Why can't I remember?
Ellie Kemper.
Ellie Kemper. I think she's going to even have a hard time to do it because you've got Lisa Kudrow back for the comeback. You've got Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin for Grace and Frankie.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot.
You've got all the girls, which, god damn it, stop nominating anything from that in that category.
Yeah, you've still got Polar for the swan song of Parks and Rec. Right. It's a very crowded category. In the supporting ones,
you
though,
know Rob Lowe's going to figure out a way to get nominated as Best Lead Actor again.
He
somehow.
Always will try, absolutely.
Having not been on the show in a season and a half, he'll still do it somehow.
He's still going to figure out a way.
I'm Emmy nomination Rob Lowe.
But speaking of Transparent, Tambor is a shoe-in. I would love him to get nominated, but I'm crossing my fingers for Judith Light and or Amy Landecker, who I think are both great. I think maybe Judith Light has the edge there because she's the more comedic of the two of them in that show. And I mean, it's Judith Light. She's amazing. And suddenly total awards bait, at least if the Tonys are anything to go by. Merritt Weaver for Nurse Jackie. She won 2 years ago. She didn't get nominated last year. I would love her for her to get one last bit of recognition
because she's
so good
season.
On this season of Nurse Jackie. People seem to think Titus Burgess is going to get a nomination for Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and I agree. I think that would be wonderful, and I would love for Carol Kane to join him. That probably is much less likely, but I think people seem to be predicting Jane Krakowski, who's also great, but I like Carol Kane even better on that show, I think. And as for Jennifer Lewis in Black-ish, who I also think is phenomenally funny on that show, she rides that line between guest and supporting, because this year they put down the rule that you have to be in less than 50% of the aired episodes to be considered a guest, and she's probably right on that level.
Yeah.
When Lawrence Fishburne left to go film his Hannibal episodes, she kind of just slotted in there as the whatever fifth cast member, sixth cast member on that show. But I think she's so funny, and I think she brought a lot to that show. In drama, Lorraine Toussaint in Orange is the New Black, I can't tell whether she's a long shot or a shoe-in. She's one of the two. It's either going to be like, oh, yes, obviously, because she was such a huge presence on Orange is the New Black last season.
She was amazing.
But sometimes the Emmys do get stuck in their ruts, and they nominated Kate Mulgrew last year, and Mulgrew's great. But sometimes they might think, oh, Kate Mulgrew and Uzu Aduba are our people who we're going to concentrate on this show. Mm-hmm. So it's tough for a new person to break in on a second season of a show. I don't think The Leftovers is going to get much of anything, but they have three A-plus candidates for supporting actress on that show. And they're going to get forgotten, and it's going to bum me out. I think Carrie Coon and Ann Dowd and Amy Brenneman were all really great.
Yep.
And it's going to bum me out when they get left off.
Carrie Coon and Tracy Letts are like my dream Emmy nominees, first of all, and also dream double date.
Oh, right, because he was a full-on cast member on Homeland the last season, right?
Such a snarky bitch, like,
he really was.
To the best effect. That he's like, Carrie, are you fucking insane more than usual? And I'm like, oh my God.
I quit the show.
I love you.
I quit the show, and early in that third season, he was the only thing that was keeping me holding on by, like, my fingertips.
Oh, Joe got really good after that.
I know, I heard.
It didn't?
Okay, because I heard it did. I heard people liked the fourth season.
No.
And while I'm talking about impossible dreams, two of them that would never happen in a million years, but I would personally, they would get my votes. Haley Atwell on Agent Carter.
Yes.
And Grant Gustin on Flash, who is
I have no opinion. I don't watch it.
I think he's really, really good in a field that never is considered for this kind of thing. And you wouldn't, even if you love a show like Flash, you never really watch those shows for like blown away performances, but I think he's really, really phenomenal on that show.
Shows like Flash and The Arrow and all those.
Right.
The Arrow Grandpa.
What did I say?
It's just called Arrow.
The Green Arrow Program. The Texaco
Continue
Hour
the
Green Arrow Program. Those will, whatever the, you know, the People's Choice Award equivalent is these days, that'll be all that wins.
They'll get their Saturn Awards or whatever.
Yeah, people love them. They're fun shows. So
Just a quick note, we mentioned Orange is the New Black, or Joe did in his rundown. It is back as of late Thursday night. I have only watched the first four so far, but it's good. It's enticing. I feel that they continue to work on the calibration of how much Piper an episode needs. Very little. And we've gotten some very good backstory from characters that we hadn't seen before. Big Nikki episode. And my favorite so far of the ones I've watched is the Boo
Oh, it's so good.
Episode. Not just because she has a nice dad at the beginning, but then things happen and her dad is not as nice. So yeah, it's the stakes now this season are maybe the prison is going to be shut down. I feel like now we don't need to spoiler this, right? People have had a chance to watch four episodes by the time this goes up on Tuesday.
Let's do it just to be safe, because then I don't have to deal with angry emails.
All right.
Orange is a New Black episode, Beyond episode. What are we doing?
Well, I was just at three
Orange
or
is a New Black spoilers.
Yeah.
You deal with it, people.
All I was going to say is just that there's the stakes this season, or the overarching story seems to be what's going to happen with the prison, whether it's going to get shut down or whether some kind of shady deal will be struck with a weird prison corporation. And it, from what I can tell, what people are tweeting, Mike Birbiglia is going to be a big villain. So I'm looking forward to seeing
that.
Oh,
really? That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm through eight and he's good.
He's a real bastard. Okay, good.
Yeah. He's a squirrely little bastard, as you can imagine.
Excellent. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to knocking off the rest of this maybe today. So yes, this is your DVR alert equivalent for a Netflix show. Orange is the New Black is back. Get on it.
Yeah.
Orange is the New Black. Season 3 spoilers are now at an end.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
I made a list, Orphan Black clones list, from worst to first as of today, Sunday, June 14th, 2015. Number 13 slot, all the caster clones tied for last place.
Agree. Agree.
Number 12, Charlotte, the gimped-legged 8-year-old clone that they're trying to whip up a new batch, and she's the only one that survived. She's number 12.
Yeah.
Bottom of the list, like all kids should be always. Number 11, all the dead clones who died off screen or before the events of the show.
Does that include
ones in Europe and here and there and everywhere.
Including Beth? Not including Beth.
Before the show.
Okay.
Before the show. All she right, died sorry. On the show. Number
okay,
10,
sorry.
Jennifer, the straight-to-video clone, dying of respiratory illness.
Oh, yeah.
Number 9, Tony, the transgender clone.
Yep.
Number 8, yeah. Beth Childs, who stepped in front of a train and started this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Number 7, Katya, who took a sniper bullet from Helena.
Did she ever?
Yep. Number 6, Crystal with a K, the nail salon clone.
Yep.
Number 5.
She does a good mani, though. Let's not discount how important that is in life.
Yeah, that's fine.
Delphine says it's the best manicure she's ever had, and I trust Delphine and Matters Manicure.
Number 5, Sarah's favorite, Cosima, the dreadlock scientist. Not my favorite, but she's in the top half. Number
she's
4,
dropping though, because she's dumb.
Yeah. Number 4, Sarah, our clone of all traits, master of none sort of character.
Yeah.
Number three, our one-eyed, all-seeing CEO, Rachel, moving up the ranks this season. Number 2, Helena, Toxic Scorpions.
Yep.
Love her. And of course, number 1, forever and all time, the best around. No one's ever going to bring her down. Allison.
What about the scorpion, though?
Well, the scorpion's not one of the clones.
No.
If we had like a separate like list of all the supporting
Tatiana
characters,
Tatiana Maslany performances,
the scorpion would be there. Allison's husband would be up there, especially this season. He's really come into his own.
Yeah, I love Donnie.
Yeah.
And I would say Helena is like starting to maybe edge out Allison for me. This whole school board thing is really boring. And Helena is just chaotic evil and I love it.
Well, Helena as Allison in the last
episode.
That
was amazing.
Was fantastic.
Yes, it
that
was.
That was kind of brilliant.
Yeah, it was great.
So that's my list.
Good list.
All right, everybody, it's time to buy an extra hot, great ad. $50 for a personal ad, $100 for a business ad. You've been hearing them. We make them. You just tell us what to do, or you just say, hey, I don't know, here's some money. Dave, Tara, Sarah, make me an ad.
Do something dumb, and we will.
So go to the EHG menu item on our site, pull it down. There's a buy an ad link, and you can follow that, fill it out, and I will take care of you from there. Also, I Am Not a Crackpot episode coming up in a couple of weeks. We've already started getting submissions. Thank you very much. But we do need more. So if you have a I Am Not a Crackpot theory involving television, we were talking about the very annoying empty drinking cup last week. There are many more, such as how come you know, people think when you're whispering at this tone, the table next to you can't hear you.
What is with 555 numbers still in this day and goddamn age?
Yes. So we've been getting them in. We need more. So please submit them. Send your audio submissions to ehg@previously.tv. Thank you very much. All right, it is time for the canon. Today's submission comes from Dan Cock, and it is a good one.
Hello, Extra Hot Great. Today I am submitting for induction to the canon, Season 1, Episode 3 of Review, Pancakes, Divorce, Pancakes. Review stars Andy Daly as life reviewer Forrest McNeil. He gets suggestions for life events to review, and he does them, no matter what they are. In this episode, Forrest's first task comes from a man dealing with the problem of how to find recipes that serve anything less than a small army.
This comes from Nick in Syosset, New York.
Uh-huh. Hey, Forrest. So, on the back of this box of pancake mix, they tell you how to make 15 pancakes, but it doesn't tell you how to make any fewer than that. So, here's the thing. I live alone. Do they expect me to eat 15 pancakes? What's it like to eat 15 pancakes?
No, really? That's the profound life experience he wants to know about eating 15 pancakes.
That's his request, so.
Yes, that is the request that has been made. Okay.
Ever the chipper optimist, Forrest finds the task ridiculous, but nevertheless sets out to eat the 15 pancakes and finds some sort of meaning in it. In Frank's diner, Forrest continues to lament the stupidity of the task while remaining professional about his duties.
Okay, 5 tall stacks of pancakes.
Yes.
They say back in the kitchen, if you can finish it all, we'll put your picture up on the wall.
No, I don't think so, but thank you.
But the scene quickly turns gruesome as the upsetting number of pancakes becomes too much for Forrest to handle. Forrest frequently adds commentary to the scene, and it is a beautiful combination of snark, disgust, and professionalism that makes the ultimate crash and burn all the more enjoyable.
3 pancakes in, and I already feel that I have greatly overindulged. I am full of pancakes. Any rational person feeling the way I do now would definitely stop.
Finally, though, with the support of his producer, Forrest finishes all of the pancakes.
These aren't food.
Gives the experience 1/2 star and moves on to the next viewer-submitted event to review.
Hello, what's it like to get a divorce?
Oh, no.
Getting a divorce. It is about at this point in the episode that the cringe comedy really comes out. We watch Forrest awkwardly fumble around asking for a divorce with no real reason except for perhaps going out on a high note. The whole thing is absurd and uncomfortable and painful to watch, and somehow still hilarious. Forrest starts sleeping in his office, where the intern also coincidentally lives. He's shunned by his child, can't listen to music or dine out without thinking of his ex-wife.
Love songs became unbearable.
And he can't sleep because of the aforementioned intern. Finally, he meets with his ex-wife, who has decided that she was not, in fact, happy in the marriage, and has brought her lawyer to finalize the proceedings. Overall, divorce gets no rating, and Forrest has officially hit rock bottom.
What is my next review?
Okay.
I just got divorced for this show. I don't care what happens next.
Okay. Next is from at Christy LaPlante in Augusta, Georgia.
Beautiful town.
Yep. She wants to know, what is it like to eat 30 pancakes?
30 pancakes.
Yep.
This is a different person from the 15 pancake person?
Yep.
It's 2 different people.
Yeah. Yep.
Doesn't seem possible. Here we are.
Yep.
What's it like to eat 30 pancakes?
After exiting, verbally abusing the crew and the audience, he goes to the same diner and plows through 30 pancakes. We watch the life drain from his eyes as Forrest becomes a cold shell of a man who would be hollow if not for all the pancakes.
And then, from somewhere deep and previously unknown, there sprang a reserve of fortitude and courage. Or was it resignation? Or fatalism? Or nihilism?
Eating 30 pancakes, as it happens, gets 5 stars because Forrest has found some solace in overcoming his own willpower and digestive system.
Or perhaps I simply understood from the darkest corner of my soul that these pancakes couldn't kill me because I was already dead.
I love the running gags in this episode of the producer refusing to let Forrest quit on his own orders, the cars backing out of the parking lot upon seeing Forrest throwing up most of Frank's pancakes, the fact that Forrest is constantly professional about all of the ridiculous tasks, and I personally love A.J. Gibbs' sociopathic ability to give Forrest the literal worst challenges on Earth without giving any fucks. There are so many little moments in this episode that remain funny even after several viewings. Andy Daly and Jessica St. Clair are fantastic and ridiculous together. Supercut of their divorce argument is comedy gold. I could say more, but all in all, I think this is one of the hands-down funniest episodes of a very funny show, and I hope you will agree that it belongs in the canon.
Thanks, Dan. I'm pretty sure that Tara, me and you talked about this on Around the Dial when it first came out. I
may
know we
have
talked about it at length,
yeah.
And we were singing its praises, especially this episode when it came out.
Yep.
So I want to throw it to Sarah and Joe first.
Yeah, let's start with Sarah, because when we got to a certain point in the episode, I was like, oh, I forgot about this, but I picked it from the list. This is going to be rough on Buncey.
We all know how Buncey feels about situations in which someone might boot.
Yep.
Or is booting.
Yep.
Like, congrats on the realism, but nah. Cute.
That aside.
I didn't like this.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't like this. I thought it was too slow, self-regarding. I wanted to like it, but there was no way I could like it as much as it seemed to like itself. Like, this cast is amazing. I love that her... I had this like Pavlovian response to the wife's divorce lawyer because he was in Election. I think that was his first role. And every time he comes on screen, and he's worked plenty since then, every time I see him, I'm like, take it easy, Fouch. Like every time. This is Fouch, it's fun to say. I love Jessica St. Clair on Playing House.
Yeah.
The concept is good. I just kept waiting for it to like really catch fire, and it never did. Like the intern like coming out and trying to find a condom scene was typical for me. That I was like, yeah, like okay, ha ha, like get on with it. I don't know. It just felt a little self-regarding. I don't know. It's just me. And then you know, I might have been a little more on the fence about it, but like, dude, like prop bomb, Pasadena. I am sure that Joe felt better about it than I did. Joe?
I have, as Tara in particular knows, I have a particular relationship with sort of cutting edge comedy, I feel like. I sometimes feel like I wait to be hectored into it and sort of like, I resist for these sometimes childish reasons or whatever. It's just like, I don't wanna. and then a lot of the times it just sort of like does leave me in the dust. I know I was sort of...
Oh, I do the same.
It's weird to say like I'm an early adopter for not watching Louis, but I'm an early adopter for not watching Louis. And I'm just going to take credit for it at this point.
High five.
So I know when this first aired, my then Atlantic coworker, David Sims, was hugely high on this. And he's really attuned to a lot of the newer comedy stuff. And I watched it on his recommendation and expecting to feel like, okay, this... And I do get the self-regarding thing a little bit. To me, I think the show overcame it for me, just because I found it really funny and really, I loved the way the tone of it, the sort of very serious and studious tone of it, kept getting undercut first by the ridiculousness of just the request of the pancakes, where he's just like, really? Like, that's the that's the life experience you want me to have. And then I love anything where somebody is trying to be very professional in the grim face of like of sad futility, where it's just like, even if he does this, what is that even going to do for him? Like,
there's
what's it going
to
prove?
Joke in here somewhere. I just can't quite get to it.
And then the divorce stuff is so sad and funny at the same time. And I love Jessica St. Clair, like, to the moon and back. Like, I think she's phenomenal. And
I also love his producer, like, James Urbaniak. I love that guy. Like, it was just like, why? What? Like, here's you and there's Fouch. Why? I like this more.
Yeah. It won me over, I think, with, I think in many ways, this sort of has the setup of more of a web series than a TV show, in that it's very sort of task oriented and very segmented into like, here's task one and here's task two and task three. And the way that the three of them get tied together, where the second pancake thing becomes something about something completely different than the first pancake thing is in terms of his emotional state and the ravages of such. I like how it took something that probably would have worked better as a web series and made it into an actual half hour of television.
Well, the other thing about this series is that it builds upon previous reviews so that there is throughput throughout the season. The divorce thing comes up, like it affects everything that happens after all the reviews he does in subsequent episodes. So these are
like,
not silos.
There's another review that's like dating a celebrity or like having sex with a sex doll and stuff that are sort of come out of that.
Yeah. So it ties in more than just within the episode. It goes outside too.
Yeah, but I liked it.
I love this one. I won't get into all of it because I wrote about it at the time that it was on. But I appreciated this time through. I should say, first of all, I think when we watched it, we watched a screener on Comedy Central, and it either was called Pancakes semicolon Divorce or maybe just Pancakes. Yeah. Like, I think it really does a disservice to the reveal of the episode to have get called Pancakes Divorce Pancakes now, because now you know there's another pancake thing coming.
I considered trying to cut that out when he talked about it at the beginning of his review, but just the way he was talking, I couldn't really do it without making it super obvious.
Well, but there's
totally agree.
It wouldn't have changed it for Joe and Sarah either, because once they went to Hulu to watch it, there it is.
Right. Yeah.
So when you watch it, when we watched it, not knowing the third thing was going to be more pancakes, I mean, you try to use your imagination to how incredibly funny that was. Anyway, it was to me. But this time I more appreciated Jessica St. Clair. And when he comes to the house after the divorce and she's got them all ready to go to sign and Fouch is there. And then because Forrest is convinced that she's called him to like try and reconcile and make him come back. And that does not happen at all. She's like thrilled to divorce him because she thought they were in a rut. And then as he's leaving, he tries to give her a kiss. And the way she does a full body cringe away from him, like, what's happening? It's like, it's genius. She's a genius. And I love this episode. And it is for sure the best one of the season. So,
absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm in for this one too. What I agree with Sarah though is the intern was a misstep.
Agree. Yeah, absolutely.
It is like rote comedy in a better show. I think if you haven't watched the show and you're hearing these clips and you want to get the overall tone and maybe you're missing it, if you imagine this was a British show, you probably get the humor they're going for. It's very matter of fact. It's very like stiff upper lip against all odds, and keep carry forward. And it's originally an Australian show, right?
Yes.
So you can kind of see a bit of that Commonwealth DNA carried forth to the Andy Daly show. And Andy Daly is a comedy treasure. It's a shame that it took him so long to find something to showcase his talents, you know, because he's a really good comedian, but he's kind of been stuck in, Yogi Bear.
He's done some decent character roles. He was on Enlisted and he had a recurring role on Eastbound and Down and stuff. So he's
but it's nice to see him
respectable jobs
in the spotlight.
It's because he has the look of a boring dad though. That's the thing.
Completely.
Like, he looks like a boring dad. And I bet you that's why he hasn't gotten cast in more interesting things.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about his professionalism,
you make
like
a nice living as a boring dad type though.
That's true.
Yeah, when the pasted on grin, like the immovable smile of his is like what makes the show work, even when they're having him do stuff that's horrible. Like I think the episode before this is, what is it like to be racist? And it wouldn't work at all if it wasn't for, like, you can tell the basic goodness of Andy Daly. Like,
right.
Obviously, he's a depraved comedian, but at the same time, like, you can tell he's a good dude.
And isn't there another one along that lines? It's like, what's it like to have a criminal record or something of that sort?
Well, there's what's it like to do drugs. That's in the first episode when he gets addicted to cocaine. Anyway.
Yeah. I really like this episode a lot. It's right up my comedy alley. So, but Sarah, I totally get it. And I'm sorry for not warning you about the barf.
I forgot.
Yeah. There's a name for that.
I read Tara's review from last year. So I knew it was coming. It was no Jackass 2.
No.
Unfortunately.
Metaphobia is the word that you're thinking of.
It's not the show. It's me.
Oh, dear.
But there are circumstances under which this could have been extremely funny to me, but I just think it's a little, like, between the intern and the fact that the framing device is a little too, it's just done a little bit too archly. Yeah. It's just not for me, but again, it's not the show. It's me.
All right, so let's put it to a vote. Tara.
Yay.
Joe.
Yay.
Sarah.
Excellent submission professionalism, Dan.
Absolutely.
For me.
Yes, I particularly enjoyed the nothing can fill his empty soul but the pancakes line.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing.
Well done.
I'm going to say yes. Anytime. Yeah, so this is 3-1, which means that... Review Season 1, Episode 3, Pancakes, Divorce, Pancakes, submitted by Dan Koch. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and Loser of the Week. Tara has our winner.
Winner is Degrassi, which was canceled for about 5 minutes from Teen Nick and apparently CTV, and Netflix immediately picked it up next day. So the kids of Degrassi Community School will live to angst again. Thank you, Netflix.
The TV viewing public is really going to feel it when Netflix reaches that point where they don't snap up every show that is canceled early, in quotes.
Well, yeah, this show has been on
moment,
for like 15
that moment's
seasons.
Coming, people, and when that happens, you just can't assume, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, like what if Netflix was around when Jericho was canceled for the second
time?
I was
totally going to mention Jericho. Yeah. Thank you.
It's almost like one of those. I can't remember what it was when you were younger. They would. There would be like something that gave away a prize that you had like a shopping spree in a mall mm-hmm. and you had, I think it was like a game show or whatever, and you didn't know how much time you had, but you had to like grab as much stuff as you could until they like rang the horn. Yeah. And that's what Netflix feels like right now. It's just like grab everything you can while you can because they're going to blow the horn sometime soon and it's just going to be over.
Absolutely. All right. Loser of the week is...
Stamos!
John Stamos was taken into custody Friday evening after, quote, he was spotted driving erratically in his Mercedes, unquote. I'm not sure why we needed the make and model detail there, TMZ, but anywho. The LA Times added that a possible medical condition, known to lay people as bourbonosis, it did not add, may have been responsible. Here's the thing. I really do hope he's okay, but we've heard this bullshitty song before after the jet lag Aussie morning TV incident.
Oh, yeah.
Stamos, we love you, so straighten your shit out before they have to change the show's name to Fuller Big House. Am I right?
Stamos!
All right. Last call for extra hot, great shirts, people. This is the last episode that you'll hear before the pre-order era?
Era ends. Period?
No, I'm going to go with era because it's pretty epic.
Epoch,
yeah.
Jinx.
All right. So to get your valued guest shirt, big letters say valued guest on the front. On the back, we got extra hot, great, and previously TV. Go to previously.tv, hit that EHG link up top, and there'll be, go to the store link, and buy yourself an valued guest shirt and support the podcast. All right, guys, that ad, as tortured as it was, reminds me of this question. Do you know what time it is?
Stamos?
Stamos time? Drink time?
It's game time.
Just as good.
Buy a shirt from the store link. All right, everybody. This is the ninth game time of the season. After Tara's victory in last week's Bring Out Your Dead game time, the standings are Tara, 4 points. Sarah, 3 points. Valued guests, buy the shirt, with 1 point.
We got to stop her, Joe.
Yeah.
If Tara wins this game time, that's right, she wins the season. the season. Today we are playing EMDB from previously.tv contributor Jeff Alexander, a.k.a. Emma Giant, who, for his troubles, earns himself an extra credit. Ta-ting! Redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. All right. Jeff explains, as you know, our TV broadcasts have been beaming out into space for decades. In fact, the rest of the galaxy has started to compile its own EMDB, the Earth Movie Database. The aliens are great at recognizing human faces, but they've got some of the character names mixed up, especially for actors who have starred on more than one show. Mm-hmm. For instance, they know that Edie Falco, star of Nurse Jackie and Sopranos, as Jackie Soprano. For each player's turn, I will read the first name of a character on one show and the last name of a different character on another show as if they were one person, such as Jackie Soprano. You will need to tell me the name of the one actor who played both characters.
Oh, boy.
For each correct answer you give, without requesting a clue, you get 2 points.
Okay.
If you need a clue, I will give you the name of the show in which the actor played the character with the first name, so the first show involved.
Got it.
For instance, if you needed help to answer Jackie Soprano, I would give you the clue, Nurse Jackie. You would get a correct answer after that, 1 point. An incorrect answer or non-answer is, of course, worth 0 points, Jeff adds helpfully.
Thanks, Jeff.
if you guess and you're wrong, still...
Nope.
That's it?
One guess.
Nine Hinton? Okay.
Nope. All right, so he says you get 0 points and a cosmos full of aliens who remain confused. Your answer must be in the name of the actor. He wants to make sure that you do not get points for the chick from blank or the dude who married blank are not valid responses. He is a harsh taskmaster, this Jeff Alexander.
I'm already mad at all the Bryans that I know are in all our futures.
All right, about the shows, they were or have been on the air for more than one season, from the 1960s to the present.
Okay.
They are on network, premium, and basic cable, and they are all live... Sorry, they're all scripted live-action series from North America.
Okay, no cartoons.
The characters, each character referenced is or was an opening credits member of the show cast.
Okay.
For multiple seasons, okay? If not all its run. All right, we are using first and last names only, no titles, no ranks, etc., nicknames, middle initials, or suffixes. All right? He's covering all the rule bases.
Terms and conditions may apply.
Wait, he's not done with the rules.
That's my Freddie Prinze Sr. guess.
Guys, listen. He's got one very important rule you have to listen to. The player with the most points at the end wins.
Oh!
All right.
Twist!
There are 63 Shit. Questions.
Shit.
There will be a tiebreaker if necessary. Let's throw it to Picky, who see who's going to start.
We will start with Joe.
All right, we're going to start with Joe. Are we ready to play?
So then Joe EMDB.
Yes.
Joe Saramy? Okay.
Yep. Ready to play?
Yes.
Yep. Here we go.
Sure.
Number one for Joe.
Yes.
Your EMDB character name is Sunny Bridges. We're looking for the actor.
would this be Don Johnson?
That is good for
Sir
2 points.
Sir Don Johnson?
We're talking Sunny Crockett from Miami Vice and Nash Bridges from Nash Bridges.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
James Hooker.
Oh, that would be my birthday mate. William Shatner.
The Shat. James Kirk. T.J. Hooker.
Excuse me, Admiral William Shatner.
Ernest Jefferson. Ernest Jefferson for Tara.
I will take the Ernest clue, please.
Amen.
Sherman Hemsley.
Good for 1 point. Okay. Ernest Fry from Amen. George Jefferson from the Jeffersons and All in the Family.
Got it.
Okay. So Tara's in last place after our first questions.
Game over.
Thanks
Game
for fixing it.
Thanks for coming out, guys. Back to Joe.
Yes.
Fox Moody.
All right.
Fox Moody.
I'm going to guess that Moody is Duchovny's Californication guy, so David Duchovny.
That's good for 2 points. Fox Mulder, Hank Moody.
All right.
Sarah.
Yep.
Johnny Castle. Johnny Castle.
It's got to be the Vicomte de Nathan Fillion.
That's very good. Johnny is Johnny Donnelly from Two Guys, A Girl, Two Guys and a Pizza and a Place.
Good.
Oh,
great.
Okay.
And Richard Castle from Castle. All right. Tara?
Yep.
Clarissa Spellman.
Oh my God, what is her name? Melissa Joan Hart?
2 points. That nice. Is Clarissa Darling from Clarissa Explains It All.
Pronounces It All.
And Sabrina
Spellman.
Yes, yeah, Spellman. Thank sure. you. Mm-hmm. Okay, back to Joe.
Yes.
David Morgan.
David Fisher, Dexter Morgan. Michael C. Hall.
2 points. Well done. Mm-hmm.
Joe Reed came to play.
Yes.
Sarah. Lily Rosenberg. Lily Rosenberg. I know you watched
her actual name just like completely fell down the drain, and all I can think of is her fucking husband. Oh yes, Allison Hannigan.
Nice.
Lily Aldrin from How I Met Your Mother and Willow Rosenberg from Buffy. All right, Tara.
Yes, sir.
Your third question.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Hotchner. Hotchner. Greg Hotchner.
Ugh,
tough one.
Like some procedural I don't watch. Hint, please.
All right. Your hint is first name comes from Dharma and Greg.
It was from a procedural I don't watch. Thomas Gibson.
And do you know what that procedural was?
Yes. He's on Criminal Minds, right?
Where he plays Aaron Hotchner.
Yes.
Correct. All right. Back to Joe.
Yes.
Sarah Gilmore.
That would be the lovely Lauren Graham.
That is worth 2 points. Sarah Braverman from Parenthood. Lorelai Gilmore. Gilmore Girls. Tona. Oh, my God.
This is for Sarah.
Yeah, Tony. I said
Try
Tona.
Try again.
Tony Ewing.
Oh God. So that probably a Ewing from one of the Dallases. And I don't know which Ewing. No, I'm just gonna ramble for a minute.
That's
back
fine.
Back off, Dave.
Whoa. I was just trying to
Wow.
This is serious.
She says,
that's bullshit.
Prodding her with a sack full of Dave points.
I am hurt.
So that guy's name, where he was on the show, Suzanne Summers. And I can't remember his name, and I'm going to guess that it is Patrick Duffy.
Oh, Dave, you're stupid for suggesting a hint. The hint was I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh.
That's Tony Nelson. I Dream of Jeannie. J.R. Ewing. That is Larry Hagman.
Who was named Still Tony stupid? In the 60s?
Tony Nelson.
Yeah.
Anthony? Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right. Tara?
Yep.
Thomas Reagan.
Hint.
Magnum P.I.
Oh. Tom Selleck.
Thomas Magnum, Frank Reagan, Blue Bloods. Great. Blue Bloods. Blah.
Blah.
Willie Krebs. K-R-E-B-S for Joe.
This Willie is not Krebs. Convenient at all. I'm going to take the hint.
All right, your hint is Gilligan's Island. First name comes from Gilligan's Island.
Maynard G. Krebs, which I only know from like a Simpsons joke that was like the most tangential thing ever. Bob Denver.
Nice.
That is good for 1 point. Willie Gilligan, and Maynard Krebs from the Lives and Loves of Dobie Gillis. Mm-hmm. Ooh, all right, Sarah.
Yo.
Your last question before the first score break. Valerie Buffet.
Buffet.
Yeah, corrected myself as soon as I said it. Valerie
Lisa
Buffet.
Kudrow.
2 points. Valerie Cherish from The Comeback. Phoebe from Friends. Tara, mm-hmm. bring us into our first score break.
Okay.
Veronica Vanderhoeven.
I believe this is Kristen Bell.
That is 2 points. Veronica Mars, yes. You know what the other show is?
From her Parks and Recreation character.
Incorrect. Jeannie Vanderhoeven from House of Lies. But it doesn't matter. You got the 2 points.
Doesn't matter. All right. Very close game. I have 7. Sarah has 8. Joe has 9.
All right. So that was 15 out of 63. Lots of game left.
Oh, yikes. All
Back
right.
Back to Joe.
Yes.
Sam Becker.
how could we all forget Becker? Ted Danson.
Some of us didn't, Joe.
Valiantly.
Sam Malone, John Becker. Cheers.
Some of us are Becker. Still hoping Netflix revives Becker.
Oh, my God.
Get out.
Yeah. But do they have enough money to get that girl who went on to star in Deep Space Nine? That's the real question.
Her.
17?
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
For Sarah. Mm-hmm. Jed Jones.
Jed or Judd?
Jed.
Jed. Jones.
Jed Jones. I had no fucking idea the second one. Did you ask for a hint? Sorry.
I did not ask for a hint. Okay. The only way to win is to guess at two pointers. Martin Sheen.
Oh, that's what I would have guessed too.
Me too.
The hint was Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh.
Still would have gotten it. So.
Characters were Jed Clampett from Beverly Hills Billy, Hillbillies, and Hills Barnaby Billy. Jones from Barnaby Jones.
Barnaby Jones.
Tell you about my
Barnaby
new best
Jones.
Friend. Barnaby Jones. Number 18.
I should submit that for the King of the Mountain for it to get like 2% of the vote.
Oh my God.
All right, yeah, Pete Dursell Jones.
You had,
I love you.
You had a rough week. On
not
you.
Not yeah. fair.
What were your two? You had...
Erica Kane won once, but right. then yeah. I went down to Boomer and Blankenship went down to Boomer 2 days later, that's so that right. was tough.
And the week before you lost with...
with Darcell Jones.
Yeah.
Number 18 yes. for Tara, uh-huh. Raylan Bullock.
Really? That's my boyfriend, Timothy Oliphant.
Who?
Timothy off with his pants.
Yeah, that's right.
Timothy...
Off with his pants. Mm-hmm. 2 points. Justified, Raylan Givens. Seth Bullock from Deadwood. Yep. All right. Back to Mr. Reed. Elizabeth Porter.
Elizabeth Porter or Potter?
Porter.
Porter. P-O-R-T-E.
Oh, God. I almost asked for a hint. Thank God I did not. Kerry Russell.
That is, yes. You know the shows?
That would be, Porter is Felicity and yep. Elizabeth is the Americans.
That's right. Well done. All right, Sarah. Colt Austin. And I'm going to tell you, you don't need a hint. You'll get this one, I think, on your own. Colt Austin.
Colt?
No,
Colt.
Colt with
like
a
Colt 45 or Colt.
No, I know. Oh. Colt?
Colt?
Yes. I need a hint, please.
All right. You'll get it from the hint. The Fall Guy. Colt Austin.
I'm not sure I'm going to... I'm still not sure I'm going to get this. Okay. Lee Majors?
Yeah. There you go.
Yes.
Colt Seavers, Steve Austin, $6 million man.
Colt Seavers
is a name that a person has.
That's like great. A human penis is what that is.
Uh-huh.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
William Castillo.
Castillo?
Castillo.
C-A-S-T-I-L-L-O. Jimmy Smith? Damn.
The hint was Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, God.
Edward James Olmos. William. From Battlestar Galactica, yep. William Adama, and Martin Castillo. From Miami Vice.
Right.
Right.
Edward James almost got that one right, guys.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's worth a day point.
Woo!
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, I'll say.
All right. Alicia Hathaway for Joe Reed.
Alicia Hathaway is Juliana Margulies.
Very good. Alicia Florrick, Good Wife, Carol Hathaway, ER. Meryl Slaughter. M-E-R-R-I-L-L.
Yep.
Meryl Slaughter.
Yeah, and I'm going to give you a hint. The answer is not G.I. Joe.
Okay.
It's not Sergeant Slaughter. Although, if it only was.
Now that's in my head.
Oh, sorry.
Get it out.
Forgiveness, please.
Chew some gum. Get it out.
I feel like this is going to be the Love Boat guy, and I can't remember the Love Boat. Wait, no, I do remember the Love Boat guy's name. It's Gavin McLeod.
Yeah!
Nice! Get!
Meryl Stubbing.
The old lady.
Stubbing.
Yep. That was gorgeous, Sarah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Murray Slaughter
nice. From the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Correct. Yeah. All right. Tara?
Yep.
Mary Johnston.
Great.
Jesus.
And 227.
Mary? Oh, God, no. What is her name?
It ain't Lester.
Oh, no. Molly Gibbs.
Nice.
1 point. Yeah. Mary Jenkins, Florence Johnson from The Jeffersons.
You got it.
All right, number 25 for Joe Reed.
Yes.
Raymond Shore. Raymond Shore.
How are we spelling shore?
Like seashore.
Okay.
Or like foreshore if you spell it wrong.
This is helpful. A bit of a guess, but Alan Shore was the Boston Legal guy that James Spader played.
Is that an answer?
James Spader.
Nice.
2 points. Raymond Reddington, a.k.a. Red.
Sure.
From The Blacklist, and Alan Shore from Boston Legal and The Practice.
Nicely done.
Yeah. Good 2-pointer. For Sarah. Peter Witter. Peter Witter.
Joshua Jackson. That is Dawson's Peter. Creek and yep. Frange.
Frange is correct. Frange. Yep. Peter Bishop.
And to drink, Frange. Peru.
All right, Tara. Nora Lawrence.
Nora. Hint.
Brothers and Sisters.
Is this Sally Field?
That's Sally Field for 1 point. Nora Walker from Brothers and Sisters and Gidget Lawrence.
Oh. That was Gidget's last
Gidget.
Name?
Gidget.
What did Gidget need a last name for?
Yeah, right?
I don't know. All right. Joe's last question for the second score break.
Yes.
Dick Hartley. Hardly dickin' or...
I was gonna say that too! Dicking hard or Hartley dicking?
Dick Hartley.
Oh my God, that's Hartley. A new t-shirt. Get on that. Okay. Hint, please.
All right. Newhart.
Bob Newhart?
You know? All right, so that's Dick Loudon from Newhart and Bob Hartley from Bob Newhart Show.
There we go.
Lots of Newharts involved in that answer.
Yep.
For Sarah, your last question for a second score break. Susan Lane. Susan Lane.
Susan Lane.
Can I tell you, there was a Susan Lane in my neighborhood that I was growing up. Like, the street was called Susan Lane.
Aww.
Fascinating to all you listeners, I'm certain.
I feel like perhaps if I had watched Smallville, this information would be available to me, but I did not. It is not, and I need a hint, please.
All right. Keeping that in mind, your hint is Desperate Housewives. Housewives. Desperate
Housewives. Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that Lois Lane. And they're spectacular. Terry Hatcher. Nice.
Good for 1 point. Susan Mayer from Desperate Housewives right. And Lois Lane from Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman.
Okay.
All right. Taking us into our second score break for Tara.
Yep.
Phoebe Miceli. M-I-C-E-L-L-I.
Yep. Alyssa Milano.
Very good. Shows, please.
Charmed and Who's the Boss?
That's right. Correct. All right.
Still really fucking close, you guys. I have 13. Sarah has 14. Joe has 18.
Oh, all right. And that's kind of the halfway point. So here we go. Starting up again with Joe.
All right.
Maddie Sheridan.
M-A-D-D-I-E?
That's correct.
Sybil Shepherd.
Correct. Maddie Hayes.
So confident.
Moonlighting. Sybil Sheridan from Sybil.
Can I tell you, there was a game time before where one of the ones was Dr. Dick from Sybil, and I literally, and nobody was like, you guys were like, nobody would know that, and I was screaming in the center. It's from Sybil! It was Christine Baranski's ex-husband, not Sybil. Glad I got that out.
Oh, here's a good one. Harry Berry. Harry Berry for Sarah.
Really? Harry?
Oh, excuse me. That just came out. Harry Berry.
Harry Berry was a bear.
Berry.
Burying Harry or Harry burying? Right, guys? No?
Yeah, you're fishing for another point, but that one I'm not going to earn it for you.
Find any balls down there? Has Barry ever seen Dingleberry? I need a hint.
All right. Your hint is Night Court.
Oh, right.
Boom, ba-da-ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. Answer, please.
You know, I'm thinking, desperately thinking. I could describe him and everyone else in the credits cast to a sketch artist, and now I've completely blanked on his name. I don't know.
Harry Anderson. Harry Stone from Night Court and Dave Barry from something called Dave's World, which I have a
Yeah, this came up in another recent Game Time. That was the sitcom cartoon? Based on. No, it was a real. It was live action, but it was based on the writings of newspaper columnist Dave Barry. Gosh.
That is good casting, actually. Now that I think about it.
Tara.
Yes, sir.
Selena Campbell.
Yeah. Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
2 points. Selena Meyer from Veep. Christine Campbell, New Adventures of Old Christine. Oh, God. All right. Joe, Adrian Scarpacci. Scarpacci.
Adrian. And what was the first name?
Adrian.
Adrian.
Adrian Scarpacci. Hint, please.
Monk.
Tony Shalhoub.
Good for 1 point. That's Adrian Monk and Antonio Scarpacci from Wings.
From Wings.
Sarah. Sam Traeger.
I'm going to kick myself for needing a hint, but I need a hint.
The West Wing.
Oh, Rob Lowe.
That's good for 1 point.
Previously mentioned for his Emmy grubbing ways.
Yeah, Sam Seaborn, West Wing, Chris Traeger, Parks and Rec. Tara.
Yes.
Isaac Dubois.
I won't say Benson, but is it Robert Guillaume? My birthday mate?
It is. Ooh, and do you know the shows?
Isaac from Sports Night. What was the last name?
Dubois.
Oh, yeah. Benson from Soap and Benson.
Correct. Very nicely done. Joe.
Yes.
Walden Kelso.
Ashton Kutcher.
2 points. Walden Schmidt, 2.5 Men. Michael Kelso, That 70s Show. Sarah, Jack Salinger.
Oh, crap. Okay. Why can I remember his last name? Why? It's something short. It's something sure really is. Short. Oh, God. Please let this be the correct short name. Matthew Fox.
Yeah.
Of Lost and Farty of Pie.
Yes. Jack Shepard, Charlie Salinger. Mm-hmm. Tara?
Yep.
Hank Bluth.
Jeffrey Tambor.
Hey now. Hank Bluth. Hank Kingsley, George Bluth. Larry Sanders Show, Arrested Development. Back to Joe. Penny Hennessy? Yeah.
Oh, what's her name?
Hennessy.
Pennying Hennessy or Henny Penising?
Penising.
Is it Kaylee Cuoco?
Nice.
All right, so here's the clue was Big Bang Theory, and that's Penny from the Big Bang Theory, and the other one was Bridget Hennessy from Eight Simple Rules.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
I thought it might have been her Charmed character.
Oh, yeah.
So it is...
To Sarah,
yeah. Bill Hardcastle. Bill Hardcastle. Christ. Hardcastle's a great last name, guys.
Yeah.
I got the other non-soft castle.
Yes.
Neutral castle. I'm probably not going to know this. Can I have a hint?
Yeah. Family Affair.
Ooh,
yeah, this is a tough one. Tough one.
You
could probably guess at the other show.
Yes. But I still don't know the actor's name, so let's say Melvin Douglas. Because why?
Anybody?
Jack Warden?
No, it's Brian Keith.
Oh, right.
Not David Keith.
Not Keith David. Right.
Bobby Sufentes.
Now this is Jimmy Smith.
There we go.
That's Bobby from NYPD Blue, and that Sufentes is L.A. Law.
Victor, yes.
And let's hear it for Dave saying that last name right.
Yeah, good job, Dave.
Yeah.
Thank you.
One day point to you.
Yes.
Thanks.
And you better remember it, too.
Last question before our next score break for Joe.
Yes.
Hal White.
Bryan Cranston.
Yep, that's Hal. Last name never really known. Malcolm in the Middle. Walter White from Breaking Bad.
Is that true? We never knew that family's last name?
I don't know. Like there was like some like off-show material that seemed to suggest they had a last name, and I forget what it was, but never like canon.
It's not in the
Malcolm
middle.
Malcolm in the Middle can have canon.
Right. It's not canon. It's not in the show Bible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. Ray Hong, H-U-A-N-G, for Sarah. Ray Hong.
Okay. This is... Is that how it's pronounced? How's it spelled?
Huang?
Is it H-U-A?
Huang, probably? Yeah, H-U-A.
It's Huang. Yeah, it's basically...
I know who it is. I'm just stalling because now I can't remember the guy's fucking name. Okay. I have despaired of his hair many times when he was on Oz and when he's been on SVU and...
Well, I can tell you now, don't bother asking for a hint because you just exhausted all your hints.
I don't need a hint. I just need to remember the guy's last name.
How you doing, Tara? How's it going?
He's Asian. Yeah, just talk amongst yourselves.
So I can't remember his name either. And I walked past him on the street once in New York.
Oh, man. This is really terrible. I don't know.
Anybody?
No.
B.D. Wong?
Yep.
Oh,
damn
it!
B.D. Wong!
Oh, my God.
He's looking at you with those beady eyes.
What is wrong with you?
No, that's racist. Lisa Lockhart.
Lisa Lockhart is Maura Tierney.
Yeah.
Lisa Miller, News Radio, Abby Lockhart from ER. That was question 45.
Okay. So the scores are as follows. Sarah has 17. I have 23. Joe has 27.
All right. So 4-point difference between first and second. We've got 18 questions left, I believe. Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay.
Here we go. Joe.
Yes.
Frank Holt.
Frank Pembleton and Holt is from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. This is Andre Brower.
2 points. Well done. For Sarah, Charlie Fever. Charlie Fever. Catch it.
Oh, man. I have two choices on the last name, and I... Howard
Heckman. Explain that, because I'm curious what those two choices
because
are.
Because I just was like, it's Howard Henneman, but it isn't. It's Howard Hessman.
Yeah.
2 points. Okay. Charlie Moore, head of the class, Johnny Fever, WKRP in Cincinnati. This is for Tara.
Yep.
Al Pritchett.
Ed O'Neill.
That is good. For 2 points, Al Bundy. Married with Children, Jay Pritchett, Modern Family. Back to Joe.
Yes.
Margene Blanchard.
Jennifer Goodwin.
That is Big Love and Once Upon a Time. What's she playing Once Upon a Time?
Snow White.
Snow White. So whatever her actual Blanchard. Human name is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Snow White Blanchard.
Blanchard.
For Sarah, Jin Kelly. J-I-N. Kelly.
Jin Kelly.
Yeah.
Hint.
Lost. First name comes from Lost.
Oh my god. So then we need he's probably on the person of interest. I don't know the actor's name. I don't know.
That is Jin from Lost and Chinlo Kelly from Hawaii Five-O. That's Daniel Day Kim.
Yeah.
He with the cheekbones.
Yes. Yeah. With the super cheekbones.
Yep.
Tara.
Yeah.
Richard Coulson. Richard Coulson.
Clark Gregg.
That is correct. That is Richard Campbell from The New Adventures of Old Christine and Phil Coulson, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Dick, so Tara getting both New Adventures of Old Christine questions.
Still watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Joe?
I am. Okay. And I liked the way it ended its second season, even though it seemed to point towards scary fish oil in store shelves, which is not scary. Just go with it. It's
all right. Okay. Yeah. You've intrigued me enough to look it up online, but not watch it. That's the level. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Emily Abbott. That's two B's and two T's.
Emily Thorne and Amy Abbott. I'll get her name in a second. How did I blank on her name?
Speaking of.
Hey, it's Amy. Oh, Shield. Emily Van Camp.
Yeah. Thank God, because I'd already started to write your 2 points.
I know, me too.
And that's Emily Thorne from Revenge and Amy Abbott from Everwood. But she was also in the Marvel stuff, too.
Yeah.
Okay, Frank DePalma for you, Sarah. Frank DePalma.
Frank DePalma. DePalma, DePalma. Let's call the whole thing off. Frank DePalma. I feel like this is going to be obvious, but it isn't right now, so hint, please.
All right, Frank comes from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Fucking help me. Danny DeVito.
Yeah!
Oh,
that is good for a point. Do you know what the other one was?
Taxi?
Taxi, yeah. Louis De Palma. All right. Excuse me. Okay. Silent burp exhaust. boop. Okay. Charles Cartwright.
Hint.
Little House on the Prairie.
No. Michael Landon.
That's Charles Ingalls and Joe Cartwright from
Bonanza?
Were there three Indians last year?
Yes. Oh, I was like, wait, angels need last names now?
I was going to say.
All right, so we're back to Joe.
Yes.
Joel Epps.
Joel Epps?
Yeah, E-P-P-E-S.
Hint, please.
Northern Exposure is where Joel comes from.
And his name, was in Quiz Show... Rob Morrow,
Joel Fleischman, and then Don Epps from Numbriers.
Fleischman, Dave.
Fleischman, what'd I say?
Fleischman.
Yeah, close enough.
Seems like an appliance that you can buy from Babes in Toyland.
Fleischman.
Cold Fleischman.
Sorry.
What?
Okay. That was Joe.
Sarah.
Leonard Healy.
Leonard.
Yeah. H-E-A-L-Y. Leonard Healy.
Leonard Healy. I need a hint, please.
Leonard comes from The Big Bang Theory.
Oh, damn it. What's his name that we were just talking about? Jim Parsons.
No.
The other one?
The other one.
No, Johnny Galecki, and that is Leonard from The Big Bang Theory and David Healy from Roseanne.
Yep.
Oh, right.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Murray Turk.
Oh yeah,
Donald Faison.
And can you tell us the shows?
Yeah, Murray is from Felicity, right?
Nope.
That was
the Clueless TV show, right?
Yep,
yeah,
the Clueless TV show.
Oh right, and then Turk is from
Scrubs.
Right, his name was Tracy on Felicity.
All right, Joe, Jules Geller,
Courtney Cox.
That is Jules Cobb's Cougartown, Monica Geller from Friends,
some show.
Yeah. Yeah. According to the answer document, Mona Geller from the show Courtney Cox. That's what threw me. All right. Raina Taylor.
Connie Britton. Nashville and Friday Night Lights.
Correct. Raina James, Tammy Taylor. All right. Bring us into our last score break before the end of the game.
Okay.
This is question 60.
All right.
Charlie Guster.
I know Guster should mean something to me, but wait a minute! Dule Hill! Thank you to all the other previous game times that mentioned Psych!
That is Charlie Young from The West Wing, Burton Guster from Psych, indeed. Okay, so...
Burton.
Everybody has one question left. Is the game over already, or does it matter? Let's...
It's a little bit over. Sarah has 22. I have 32. Joe has 36.
Oh, all right. We know who's got the game, but let's play it through for Joe.
Another win for the valued guests. Very exciting.
Valued guests. Buy the shirt. Mike Keaton.
Michael J. Fox.
That is Mike Flattery from Spin City. Flaherty and Alex
Fleischman.
From Family Ties. Fleischman.
Fleischman, buy the shirt.
Ew.
Ironically, not flesh color. Leroy Cadwell.
One of those ones with the boobs on it.
Yeah.
Say that again, Dave.
Nope. Leroy Cadwell. Now, wait. Okay, you can ask. I'm going to give you a special hint if you ask for a hint, if you need it. Leroy Cadwell.
I definitely need a hint.
All right. Saying this in my best naval voice. NCIS, he says navally.
Navally. Cadwell.
You sure it's not Caldwell?
I don't know. Could be.
Okay.
Caldwell.
It doesn't help.
No, it doesn't.
Unless it's Bundy. I gotta guess Mark Harmon.
You guessed right. I suppose it was Caldwell. I'm sorry.
What was the other show?
Oh, I'm sorry. Leroy Gibbs, NCIS. Robert Caldwell from St. Elsewhere. All right, last question for Tara.
Yeah.
Sharon Kalakua. Kalakua.
Is this Grace Park?
It is Grace Park. Sharon Boomer
Yep.
Boomer Joe.
Boo.
From Battlestar Galactica.
Mer.
And Hawaii 5-0, where she...
Oh, Kona.
Boomer Fleshman. Kona. All right, let's hear them final scores.
All right, Sarah ended with 23, I ended with 34, and Joseph K. Reed Woo! Came to play with got 38. That's not his real middle initial.
It's not.
All right.
And you'll never know it, people.
Ready for the shits and giggles tiebreaker? Not needed, but let's play it.
Sure.
Yes. Tide players, according to Jeff Alexander, now display their knowledge of the man the aliens assume is our emperor. They will take turns naming shows in which Richard Belzer appeared as John Munch.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right.
All right. Are we ready?
So we just take through.
It's hot potato, alternate. Basically.
Okay. Okay. Joe Sarah.
So Joe's going to go first.
Okay. Yep.
Go, Joe.
SVU.
Sarah. Homicide, Life on the Street.
30 Rock.
Original Recipe, Law and Order.
Oh, what is this last one? Chicago PD.
Sarah's out.
Mad About You?
Sarah's out. That means Joe wins a tiebreaker as well. Ones you didn't say. The Beat.
The Beat.
Law and Order, Trial by Jury.
Oh, sure.
Arrested Development. Mm. Yeah. The Wire.
Really?
Somebody say 30 Rock?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, tired.
And lastly, nope, two more. The X-Files.
X-Files is one.
All right. Anybody want to guess the last one?
CI?
Nope. I'm going to give
Simpsons?
You a hint.
Top Rock?
That's the closest yet, but it's still way off.
Brooklyn Glee? South?
Glee is kind of close. I'm going to say it's on PBS. Check
what?
Your local PBS station.
Downton Abbey.
That's what I was going to say.
The answer is...
Call the midwife.
Sesame Street.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Alphabet Investigation Unit or something like that. Or
That's really cute.
Puppet.
That is adorable.
Played voiced by him, and he was referred to as Munch. So there you go.
That's funny.
Congratulations, Joe.
Good job, Joe.
Good job, Joe.
Joe!
Joe.
All right, guys. That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. Joe, where can people find you these days?
I'm on Twitter always at Joe Reed. I am pretty much every day at Decider.com. I'm writing about today in TV history.
Very important.
And coming June 29th for Teen Wolf's fifth season, I will be writing about that fine program for Previously.tv.
Woohoo!
All right, Tara, what you got going?
I am at Tara Ariano, TaraArIano, on Twitter and Instagram. You can read my writings on Previously.tv, including starting next week, Under the Dome! Oh, it's coming back!
Sarah?
Hello, I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation, tomato like the vegetable / berry, nation like a country, all one word. And if you want to talk more about true crime in all media, you can find me at The Blotter, that's the-blotter.com.
All right, I am at Glark, and pretty much all the social things, find me there. All right, guys, we digested the early episodes of Hannibal, the only show with more brain-eating than iZombie, before going around the dial with stops at Murder in the First, the Emmys, Orange is the New Black, and Orphan Black. We reviewed Dan Cox's canon submission for Review's Pancake episode and found it worthy. We crowned winners and losers of the week. Joe is a winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
ooh, we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, who has to adjust the length of the first clip if we're going to do this. On behalf of Tari Ariano.
Brains!
Sarah D. Bunting.
Delicious cumin.
And Joe Reed.
Bonsoir.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Crate.
Yeah, there's not really a whole lot more to say about that. It was extremely unpleasant and should be avoided at all costs. Half a star.